The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. One fall!
It's almost time for a new chapter of Geek Catch-Up to start. But before it does, Chris and I wanted to take a moment to send our love and appreciation out to all of you for choosing to hang out with us. If you enjoy Geek Catch-Up, then make sure to slam that subscribe button and help us level up the show by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
You can also find us on social media to get updates on all things GK, interact directly with us, and content from the world of geekery. Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter, links to all of which can be found in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com.
If you'd like to support the shoe, there's even links to our Square shop where you can find official GK merchandise like shirts and stickers. And Patreon, if extra content is your thing. Above all, though, the absolute best thing you can do is spread the love for the world of geekery by sharing the Geek Catch-Up podcast with your friends and family.
Now get ready to enjoy today's show, and as always, remember to stay saucy.
If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Catch-Up Podcast.
Welcome back, Geek Catch-Up family. I'm Chris Heck.
And I'm Kyle Eckert.
It's hard to believe that this will be our last chapter of 2021, but fear not. Season 3 is still in full swing, and today is a cause for celebration. Now, you may be asking yourself why we're celebrating. Is it because Christmas just wrapped up? Or maybe because New Year's Eve is right around the corner? No, no, no. We're celebrating because today marks the 50th chapter of the Geek Ketchup podcast. Over the last 2 years, Kyle and I have spent our time here talking to you about all of our favorite things from the world of geekery. As you hear at the beginning of every show, gaming, movies, wrestling, comics, television, whatever. And we've tried our best to incorporate as much of those fun things into each chapter that we can. For today, we thought we would take that concept and have some silly fun by creating our own multiverse of characters and locations, loading them all up into a randomizing wheel of destiny, and creating absurd mashups that we have to react to. In short, we're going to select a hero from a list of 136 characters, send them to one of 63 locations, give them a ridiculous reason for being there, and a villain they have to deal with. So Kyle, if you're ready to bend the laws of time and space, spin the wheel of destiny and give us our first mashup.
Do this up. Spin, 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 and spin. Oh yeah, all right, we've got matchup number one, Luke Skywalker. Headed to the island of misfit toys to seek rumored riches from Jack Bauer.
Oh my God, Luke Skywalker versus Jack Bauer.
Oh, in the hunt for riches on the island of misfit toys. So we've got a whole lot of extra background characters going on. Like, and it's perfect because it's in around the holiday season. A lot of people are probably watching Rudolph.
It's true.
So here we go. It's Luke Skywalker, first and foremost, on the island of misfit toys with his lightsaber, is probably just hacking everything to pieces. He's been on Hoth before.
Oh, yeah. He can definitely survive the colder terrain. I mean, I don't know if he's going to quite hack these toys to pieces because, I mean, he's got a lot of self-control. But I do like, because he's kind of a misfit sometimes in his own right, you know?
That's true.
He's been back and forth, so maybe he befriends the misfits, you know, like he did the Ewoks, and then they go take down the serious threat that would be Jack Bauer. So now we just got to ask, though, what is Jack Bauer's play here? Is he there, you know, with all due respect, to save a president of the island of misfit toys? Or is he, like, binging on heroin season 3 Jack Bauer, and this is, like, a weird trip that he's on?
Oh, that's true. Well, I mean, would he be the president, or he's guarding the king of the misfit toys?
Oh, that's got to be what it is.
Yeah, he's got the Lion King, which I'm King Moonracer, as it were.
With all due respect, King Moonracer.
Yeah, damn it. So, but he's there to seek rumored riches. So it would be, what rumored riches are on the island of Misfit Toys?
Yeah, I'm thinking that Luke is definitely looking for something that the king has in his possession, and then Jack Bauer is going to be sent out, you know, to dispatch of this threat. But you're definitely more of the expert on what rumored riches could be on this island.
Other than the toys themselves, I don't know if there is much to this island other than the possibility of gold and silver.
Yes, yes,
silver and gold. Watch out. That's what he's going for. It's all about this Yukon Cornelius Luke Skywalker headed here. That's the story. We've pieced it together.
I was going to say, I think we took a twist here. Now we're talking about like a Luke Skywalker versus Yukon Cornelius battle. Mini boss, maybe?
Well, I think they're just in competition with one another. You know, like a friendly rivalry. They're both there looking for gold and silver, but Jack Bauer and King Moonracer are there to keep them from finding it.
Gotcha. Okay. Now we've turned Yukon Cornelius into like the Han Solo of this story.
And Chewie, all in one. Or I guess the Bumble.
The Bumble. Yeah,
the Bumble is totally his Chewie. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, he could fit both roles with that big beard.
It's true.
But I like the idea of now I need that one shot in my life. We've totally derailed this on the first spin of Yukon Cornelius and the Bumble, you know, adventuring together.
They're the secret stars of the show that get their own spinoff after it.
There it is. Yeah. I'd say in the end, he doesn't find the rumored riches. I think Jack Bauer outwits Luke Skywalker.
Ooh, you're going to go Bauer over Sky? I mean, Bauer's pretty unstoppable. Like, let's be honest.
He is. And I know Luke Skywalker's got the Force and a lightsaber and a lot of skills of his own, but I think the entire island will work against him. I think Bauer's going to bring his support system.
Yeah, he's going to call in the SWAT team.
Yeah, it's going to be the spotted elephant. That'll be Luke Skywalker's downfall. Like, it's not the cowboy on the ostrich, not the flying fish, none of that other crazy Charlie in the Box. No, it's going to be the spotted elephant taking down Luke Skywalker.
I like it. Instead of the counterterrorism unit, CTU with Jack Bauer, it's going to be the Misfit Toys unit, MTU.
Yep.
I like it.
MCU. Yep, you got it. You got it.
MTU for the win to start us off here. So that is awesome. I am going to go ahead and spin this up again. Let's see where we're going to next and for what purpose.
We need like the big Price is Right wheel, like tick, 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 tick.
The Wheel of Destiny, spun by Bob Barker, shows Link from The Legend of Zelda heading to Pawnee, Indiana.
Oh, snap.
To sell snake oil.
Which I'm sure he has plenty of.
And is perfect for a certain business that exists in Pawnee.
This is true.
And he's got to deal with Carnage.
Oh my.
So is like Carnage, like maybe the John Ralphio here?
Could be. Yeah, John Ralphio. That makes... I don't think John Ralphio is as chaotic as Carnage, although I guess he could. No, he's not John Ralphio, but he's John Ralphio's dad.
Yeah.
Dr. Saperstein.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And that's the rival to the snake juice.
Yep.
Is snake oil.
Link's coming in with that Hyrulean snake oil to corner the market and steal the business of all the Pawnee residents. Or does he go over to Eagleton? Do you think maybe he just recognizes game and then takes on the richer Eagleton market?
I don't know. It's who's got the better snake oil. Can he sell those fine goods in Eagleton, or are they going to look down on him like he's Pawnee trash?
That's true. I mean, and Link's really a quiet guy. Like, would he even be able to sell anything? Like, is Link convincing you to buy anything, let alone snake oil? He doesn't have the charm as a Tom Haverford.
But he does have the locks. Like, I think, ooh, all I'd have to do is be like, look, I put it in my hair and look at this beautiful flowing blonde just essence that I have around me. And people are just going to buy it up. I mean, you know, Leslie Knope and her blonde hair is going to want that because she's been using mousse.
Yeah.
Forever.
Leslie Knope is susceptible to anything, so she's definitely buying some. She's gifting it to everybody in the office. She might be the client that just gets him launched.
It's true. It's true. And then on the other side, I could very much see April helping Carnage just because of the chaos. And Orm, she's going to bring in Orm.
That's for
sure. Her friend, her like goth friend. It's totally going to happen.
They're going to be the lackeys for Carnage. There's no doubt about that. But really, I think then it comes down to, I mean, could Dr. Saverstein, as Carnage, really even tolerate somebody coming in on his turf? I mean, I really feel like he might just go full Ganondorf and go after Link there, you know?
It's true. Yeah, it's just going to be a battle in the streets of, you know, in the middle of the corn maze during the Pawnee Harvest Festival. We're going to have a full-blown Link v. Carnage battle. And I'm not sure who's going to win. Carnage is susceptible to sound. Link has his ocarina.
Ooh.
Could work out in his favor, though.
Link's crafty. He's got a lot of gadgets. He's got a lot of skill sets that he could go there. And then, of course, the Master Sword and the Shield. It would be a tough battle. I think that Carnage would be a lot for one, you know, melee-focused character to take on. But I do think it would ultimately end up in the pit next to Anne's house. That would be the ultimate final conclusion of this epic battle. So that means, you know, Andy Dwyer's coming in.
Andy Dwyer is coming in, and his co-workers, the raccoons.
The raccoons.
They're going to make their way into this battle as well.
Well, and where I was going with it, you know, is that since Andy is such a pure soul, Link is quite the pure soul. Carnage is susceptible to sound. Link gets Mouse Rat to play a concert in the pit, disrupt Carnage, and then strikes him with the Master Sword. Takes over the snake oil empire in Pawnee, Indiana.
There you go. And then bottles Carnage.
Yes, bottles.
sells that whole symbiote. He just bottles that up as well.
It'd be the new fragrance, Carnage.
Carnage by Link.
By Link.
Because I would really, that's the other thing that I have in my head is, what is Link's store name?
Ooh.
Because if he sells snake oil and he sells bottled Carnage, he obviously might be able to sell some of the songs that he's, you know, written, like some records and things like that. But what would his store name be?
That's a tough one.
Honestly, it feels very fitting for it to be like Breath of the Wild. You know, if that was his, that would just be his store name. You're like, oh, what do they sell over at Breath of the Wild?
Right.
My, I wonder if they have any Skyward Swords at Breath of the Wild. Like,
right. There's definitely like a whole crystal section, you know, like rocks, the whole nine yards.
He exclusively takes rupees.
Like, right.
If you come in with cash, he kicks you out. Yeah.
It's true. It's true. That's so funny. New Breath of the Wild rupee cryptocurrency, I think, would be fitting for the time. So
there you go. There you go. And then he'll hire, you know, he'll hire Tom and Jean Ralphio in Entertainment 720 to market himself. Absolutely. He's going to need the audio, the visual. He's going to need it all. But let's spin it up one more time. See what other kooky situations we can put these folks in. Ooh, Master Chief going to Rome at the height of the Roman Empire.
All right, all right.
To befriend Captain America.
Quite interesting. I mean, Rome in itself would be very intriguing. I mean, there's definitely some similarities between, I think, a classical, you know, Roman Empire setting and what you see in some of the Halo games as far as the Forerunner technology, big structures, primitive societies, a lot of combat. But Captain America, why would Captain America be there in Rome?
Well, I'm thinking it's almost like a Planet Hulk situation. There's been a couple, you know, alternate universes where Captain America gets sent to Planet Hulk and battles. So I think that's the situation. He is the reigning champion of the Colosseum.
Okay, yeah.
You know, it's not exactly a life Steve Rogers wants to live, but this is an alternate universe. So we get an evil Steve Rogers tearing people up in the Colosseum. But here's the twist. Master Chief has to befriend him.
So he's got to work his way up. He's probably got to infiltrate, get into the gladiator competition in the Colosseum, fight his way through as he brutally can. No questions asked. He's getting to that final matchup. They seem like they're at odds. And then he's got to somehow convince him to lay down the shield, lay down the sword, lay down the battle rifle, and give him a big old hug right in the middle of the Colosseum.
Boom. And then the mob cheers with thunderous applause, and they usurp Caesar. That's totally how it goes down.
I could see that, you know. And that would be fitting, too, for Master Chief, because there's been a few times where he's kind of been balls to the wall against an enemy, and then, you know, realize that he could utilize them even though he was resistant to it. I mean, Master Chief doesn't like friends, so that's kind of an interesting aspect too. But, you know, I could see game respecting game in like a drawn-out fight, and then maybe like the stepbrothers moment where each of them does something cool and they're like, "Did we just become best friends?"
What? And you could, like, they have that military background respect for one another, and they're like, "Oh, snap. All right, on the count of three, name your favorite war." 1, 2, 3. World War II! Like, I don't know, you know? Like, I also don't want to continue that bit where, like, on the count of three, name your favorite non-pornographic magazine. Like, and they're Good Housekeeping.
Right, right. That's so funny. Oh my gosh. That is so perfect.
The dynamic, really, of Master Chief and Captain America working together in any environment is very threatening, though.
Oh, they would be an unstoppable tag team, let's be honest. Like, Master Chief is pretty much, you know, unkillable, even in space.
Yeah.
We all know that Steve Rogers comes back time and time again. I think that they would definitely run roughshod, and if they wanted to rule Rome by themselves together, then they could do that.
Absolutely.
But I do think Bucky would get a little jealous.
Bucky would get jealous. It's true. It's true. Well, and I'm thinking where he fits in here. Is he just like the lead general? Is he Captain America and Master Chief's like Maximus? He rules the army, the Roman army, you know, and then eventually he rises to power. It's basically Sebastian Stan taking on Russell Crowe's
right
portrayal in Gladiator. Why not?
And then the new best friends in Captain and Master Chief will just have to go take him down. So we've got it there. We've put out a whole trilogy of this world that we could take on from here.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, with like the first movie being Master Chief's rise, the second one being the Iron Fist rule, and then the third being, you know, the insert of Bucky rebelling against them. I like it. Like it.
Write it up. Let's do it.
Light it up. Sell it to Hollywood.
Kevin Feige,
do we have a story for you? And he's like, I hate it. Get out of my office.
He's like, what do you think this is? Fucking Fortnite? Yeah.
Which is really just the umbrella that all of this is happening under, because every character under the sun gets thrown into Fortnite these days.
Exactly. All right, well, I've got the Wheel of Destiny spinning once again. Let's see where we're at. Keeping it in the theme of the holidays with the times, we've got a hero version of Santa Claus.
Yes.
Going to your favorite place, Stardew Valley.
Oh, my God. Okay.
To fix the past.
Nice.
From Hulk Hogan.
Oh, my God. All right. Too much of this could actually happen. All right. So if we're going to do actual Stardew Valley, that is obviously a farming town that has seen better times. It used to be very thriving and is now down on its luck. And that's part of when you play Stardew Valley, you go back in and you revitalize your grandfather's farm and then actually bring commerce to the entire town. So I'm envisioning this situation in which Hulk Hogan has taken over Stardew Valley.
Hulk Hogan, we should probably say, if he's going to be villain.
It is absolutely Hollywood Hulk Hogan coming in, spray painting all over the town, taking it over, and completely running roughshod. No more local businesses. It's all JoJo Mart and Hulkamania monster drinks. That's what it is. Oh, man.
Everything is part of the NWO, essentially. NWO businesses, NWO people, like, everybody gets consumed with the exception of maybe a couple of stragglers, the pure of heart.
Right.
And then Santa Claus shows up with his magic because he has to fix this calamity that has happened.
It's true. And I imagine he starts, obviously, with the children. And he brings them toys and gifts and brings them hope, right? And then it grows, and suddenly you see little extra characters pop up that are there to help him. Sting, who never quite converted, is there to help Santa Claus. DDP, Booker T, the true WCW faithful, come and assist. They're like his reindeer. It's no longer Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen. It is Santa Claus and Booker and Diamond and Sting.
Nice.
And they run roughshod through the town, taking over from Mayor Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Some sort of, like, you know, farm field fiesta match or something like that, you know? So
I love it. Yeah, instead, like, they basically just have a big cornfield and they carve out a square. So there's no, like, ropes or anything. It's all just in the middle of a cornfield. You can make a little path for them to walk up. Santa walks to the ring, and it's starting to look a lot like Christmas. Like, let's do this.
I'm envisioning this fight to go down in classic NWO fashion here. You know, the whole gang shows up. Hollywood doesn't want any part of Santa Claus for at least 10 or 15 minutes as he's walking around the cornfield. Everybody else is trying to go after the group. You know, all the reindeer wrestlers here that we're talking about now have to hold off the squad, and then Santa can finally go toe-to-toe with Hollywood Hulk Hogan. But instead of a fight, I really see Santa just figuring out what Terry Bollea wanted for Christmas when he was 8 years old and getting into his heart. And then, you know, just, he doesn't even have to fight him. He just changes him back into Hulkamania Hulk Hogan. There's vitamins, there's prayers. The whole landscape goes from dark and dreary to bright and sunny. And that Christmas magic is what is able to just take him out of that Hollywood phase.
And that's when he does it. He goes back in time.
Yes.
And he gets young Hulk Hogan and changes it. I love it.
Keeps him on the past, keeps his belief in Santa Claus alive, so that way he never gives in to the evil Eric Bischoff.
There it is. Book it, Mr. Booker, man. Book it.
Christmas Chaos, match 2022.
I can't wait. It'd be the great comeback that we all saw coming.
All right. For Santa Claus or Hogan?
Both. You thought he was imaginary, but no, he's real. And you thought he was canceled, but he's back. All right, spinning up the Wheel of Destiny one more time. This is going to be a unique one here, as we have Soldier 76 from the Overwatch series. He's headed to Westworld, but he's there to do laundry, and he's got to go up against the Silver Surfer.
This one, I mean, you've played a lot more Overwatch than I did, so you might know a little bit more about the lore around Soldier 76, but I feel like this one might be one of the easier ones, where, you know, he ends up in Westworld, he gets sucked into one of the whorehouses, ultimately just has to sit there, work off his tab by doing all their dirty laundry, and Silver Surfer is absolutely just running the show here. He's running the machines, he's running everything.
Oh, so he's like the Anthony Hopkins,
yeah,
in this situation. Like, he's the master puppet.
Yep.
But that's designed all of Westworld. I do like that. I'm intrigued by the idea of Soldier 76 going to Westworld. Like, it's tough because he's there to do laundry, naturally. But, like, he's got to go there. And, like, what kind of damage could he do if he really went full tilt in Westworld?
I mean, you got to think, I mean, bleach is a dangerous chemical, you know, Tide could probably mess up those machines if it's, like, thrown all over them. I mean, his laundry game, you know, starch game, probably going to be pretty strong. But Silver Surfer, man, you know, I think he's going to stay one step ahead of him. He's extremely smart. He's got that galactic knowledge and probably could maybe interface with some of these machines if he wanted to. But I don't know, man. I think Soldier 76 here just gets lost in a dream and he ends up forever doing stained laundry from the whorehouse. On Main
Stain
Street.
Laundry. Why not? Yeah. he's just in the background, you know, when everybody else goes through and they have their epic scene where the character comes to steal the safe out of the bar, and there you just see Soldier 76 in the back folding laundry.
Just folding laundry. But he's got the full gear on. He's got the helmet and everything, the gun strapped to his back, but he's just like no idea why he can't do anything.
There you go. That's like, you know, like Overwatch does seasons and then they have special like seasonal outfits for each character.
Right, yeah.
I need a Soldier 76 like in his laundry attire. So it's like because it's laundry day, you know, he's going to have like the busted pants on that you only have to wear once because all your other pants are dirty. Like the vest, the jacket that he normally wears with the big 76 on the back is like the original one. So it's got holes in the elbows and things like that. Like I want that in pop form, please. Can we make that happen?
Since he would be essentially, we're writing him into like a non-important NPC in this world. So does he die pretty much every time they do the safe stealing adventure? Like, is he one of those?
I would say so. Unless he's kind of a new person in the town. Are we saying like he's part of the robots, or is he like one of the travelers?
Well, I don't know if I'd say he's a robot, but I mean, if this guy is stuck forever in hell of just doing laundry, then I would assume that, you know, he's not just a typical guest. You know, there's some reason he is stuck here in this servitude.
Okay, well then, yeah, he's absolutely dying every time. And that would be on par with Overwatch. Like, because you die and respawn, why not?
Yeah, I don't know. I think out of all of them, that one right there, kind of a more standard, like I wouldn't put Soldier 76 on the level of like a Master Chief as far as like a soldier or a video game character. So I really just think the power of Silver Surfer would just be too much to overcome. And since he doesn't have a strong enough agenda to try and take him down, I mean, he's just here to do laundry. I don't think he cares.
Yeah, he's just there it's his vacation.
He's content.
Good for him. Good for him. You do you, Soldier 76. You do you.
He can finally retire and practice his laundry game.
Leave the world of violence behind by just doing laundry in the background of a world of more violence.
All right, well, I'm spinning it up here. We have got another very fantastic video game character here, but we're going to put him once again in the hero spot, Doomguy.
Oh, Doomguy. So, oh, wow.
Yeah, Doomguy.
We're getting all the guys with like guns and heavy armor.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And he's going to be traveling to World 1-1 of Super Mario Brothers 3
to seduce. Oh, God.
What kind of game does Doomguy have in the seduction category? That's the question here. He's got to seduce. This is so perfect. A Goomba.
These guys. Yes. Yes. Amazing. Amazing. Now, is it one Goomba or all the Goombas?
I don't know, man. We just said Goomba, so it could go either way. We could extrapolate here. But I am just trying to figure out if Doomguy could set aside his hatred for monsters and find the soft spot in his heart to seduce the lowly Goomba.
The lowly Goomba. Well, he can kill all the Koopas he wants.
Okay, true.
Because there's Koopas everywhere. He can kill all the Goomba or all the Koopas. But then the Goombas, yeah, he just saves. They're like his little pets. And he seduces them and he pets them. And he has a soft spot for their little jaw teeth. They just hit the little extra teeth on the bottom. And he's like, oh, that's so cute.
Doomguy. Calling anything cute.
I call anything, and then he punches the boxes. He gets the little feathers, and he hands the feathers to the Goombas, and that's his move right there. He takes all the flowers, the fire flowers, and the tail feathers, and he presents them to the Goombas to seduce them.
So he's almost like liberating them in a way, but then maybe using the fancy items and valuables from the Super Mario world to finally give them to them. Because they don't ever get any of the good stuff.
It's true.
And essentially the Goombas rise. So maybe not like a sexual seduction, but it's more of a seduction. So that way he can, you know, control them. Or maybe he creates a gun, you know, like the BFG, the big fucking Goomba. And he loads the gun. So this is really just because he needs ammo to take on the monsters from hell.
Right.
So he's actually seducing the Goombas as ammo for his new BFG 10,000, we're going to call it.
There you go. That's the deal. He's going to do it. He's going to practice on Bowser, kill him in that universe, and then take it back to his own.
It could be done. So, I mean, the real question is, do you think the Goombas could resist?
Oh, do you think, like, his charisma check on them?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that guy looks like underneath that helmet. He could be really attractive, you know? He could basically be...
The Rock.
The Rock, yeah. I was trying to think of, like, Danny Cordray. That's who I wanted to go with in the office, like Danny Cordray or Josh Duhamel.
Yeah. You know,
like, he's just a super attractive guy underneath. So
that's
I think he does. I think the Goombas are very into Doom Guy. I think the violence, you know, they have a passion for violence and eating feet. And he's going to obviously save them from Mario and Bowser and the Koopa overlords.
They seem very trusting, too. Like, it might be that hard.
I think so. As long as they don't step on them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, as long as you don't step on a Goomba, they're all about you, right?
Yeah, they'll just follow you around.
There you go. See, and that's the whole deal about the Goomba Empire. Like, they're just living and kicking it. You know, Mario's the one coming in and creating conflict by stepping on them.
It's true.
They're just doing their thing, just walking along. So Doom Guy comes in, shows them a little bit of love. Oh, they're going to reciprocate, man.
Yeah, then he's going to be king of Super Mario World before anybody even knows what's happening.
And I'm here for it. I think I would play that game as well. If you gave me like a video game that was the Mario landscape, but with like Doom Guy in a 2D setting, he's still got all his like wonky. So it's like Doom Guy with his Contra-esque guns blasting his way through Super Mario 3. That'd be a sweet, like, hacked game.
Yeah, just the fast pace, shooting as you go through. That'd be really, really cool.
I'm here for it. Give me all of it. Just replace Super Mario with the Doom Guy.
With the Doom Guy.
Yeah, Super Doom Guy Bros. I don't know.
Who would his brother be? Oh, man. Master Chief from another universe.
Yeah, Master Chief from another universe. Or the main guy from Wolfenstein.
Like, right, there you go.
Yeah, whoever you are, the main character from Wolfenstein.
Wolfenstein.
Or The Rock. It would be it's The Rock, because The Rock was in the Doom movie.
That's true. And The Rock is in everything. So we're just going to assume that somewhere in every one of these mashups, The Rock is there. It's just a matter of what he's doing.
Yeah, he could be just lifting. He could be wrestling. He's probably one of like the lumberjacks on the outside of the ring when Santa and Hulk Hogan are wrestling. Absolutely.
Different versions of him. It's like the Young Rock show where you see like 8-year-old Dewey, 12-year-old Dewey, you know, 19-year-old Dwayne Johnson, and then The Rock. You get all the versions.
Boom. Nailed it.
So real quick, before we move on, we are going to jump out for a quick break to bring you Kyle's top 5 geek crossovers.
Kyle's top 5 geek crossovers. Number 5.
Alien versus Predator. The matchup debated over and over throughout the 80s and 90s. Who would win between these two sci-fi legends, the Predator and an elite hunter that stalks from the shadows, or the Xenomorph, the primal creature eliminating all other threats? While the movies that accompanied this crossover aren't exactly critically acclaimed, it doesn't take away from the epicness of this crossover.
Number 4.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the Power Rangers. You'd be hard-pressed to find bigger names from the 90s toy game than the TMNT and Power Rangers. Despite being rivals during that era, it didn't stop these two franchises from teaming up, and in fact, it hasn't stopped them from continuing to team up over the years, not only in live-action versions, but in animated shows, video games, and comic books.
Number 3.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? The 1988 live-action/animated movie is literally one giant crossover. Mickey Mouse, Bugs Bunny, Woody Woodpecker, and Betty Boop all make appearances. And in fact, it's the first and only time that Mickey and Bugs, as well as Donald and Daffy Duck, ever appear on screen together. Talk about historic.
Number 2.
Amalgam Comics. Marvel and DC, a blood feud that dates back to the dawn of comics. Well, not exactly. The two companies have actually worked together on several projects, including the 1996 DC vs. Marvel 12-issue crossover event that spawned Amalgam Comics. In this new universe, heroes and villains from both universes were mashed together to make new heroes. There was Dark Claw, the Batman slash Wolverine combo, Amazon, the Wonder Woman slash Storm mashup, and the list goes on and on. The imprint was short-lived, but is certainly worth a Google to see some of the wild designs.
Number 1.
It's not the original crossover, as that title goes to Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, but it's when you mention major crossover battles that this is without a doubt the first one that comes to mind. Godzilla, the King of Monsters, and King Kong, the Eighth Wonder of the World, first threw hands in 1962. And what makes this crossover our definitive number one is the fact that they actually haven't had that many crossovers. Only a handful, yet this one has stood the test of time and is always brought up whenever people are talking about monster mashups. And we're back. Hopefully you enjoyed my top five list of epic geek crossovers. I know I left a few off the list, but hit us up on social media and let us know which ones I missed that you think should have made it. But we're going to get back to our Wheel of Destiny, keep on spinning and making these ultimate universal mashups here. So Chris, let's spin this first wheel. Then I'm going to spin the second wheel and the third and the fourth. To get to, oh man, we were just talking about him before the break. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is headed to Krakoa.
Oh snap.
To start a cooking show with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, that is a very interesting thing, especially with a cooking show, because turtles can be eaten. And if they are the villain here, we got to assume, is Chef Rock going after that rare delicacy of some mutant turtle soup?
I mean, if they're the villain and he's looking to start a cooking show, then absolutely. But this almost strikes me as one of those rare ones where they are ultimately going to work together, because it's Krakoa and it's a bit of a place of peace.
Ooh, yes.
For mutant kind. And I mean, teenage, they are mutants, so it would make sense for them to be there. And The Rock, and I don't know how he has gotten his body in the size and shape that he has, so he must also be a mutant. So they're probably welcome there, and they're just going to have a good time. You know, Emerald style, they're going to cook up some pizza and do what they do for that audience.
That is a good point. Yeah, it really, I think the location is key here, as you pointed out, because we all know that on the island of Krakoa, doesn't matter what you've done in the past, whether you were a good guy or a bad guy, everybody is family here. So that is the great equalizer. They don't have to worry about duking it out here because everybody is in harmony. So yeah, now I'm just envisioning just this absolute fun sitcom of The Rock, you know, full chef gear. I'm talking white coat, bulging muscles, and full-on tall chef hat. Cooking.
Oh, yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles there at the bar, Emerald style, since you mentioned that. Like Emerald Live back in the day, where you always had the three lucky guests that got to taste the food.
Right.
And Rock is just slinging pizza.
Yep. And week after week, the guest is the Quiet Council. You know, from the X-Men universe,
there you go.
There's 12 members of the Quiet Council, and each week you get a different set of three. So it could be Mystique, it could be Destiny, it could be Charles, it could be Magneto. You never know who's going to be sitting at that table, you know, looking to see what gets whipped up and what combinations. And I'm also quite intrigued about the types of fruits and vegetables that they could throw in that grow on Krakoa.
It's quite exotic, yeah.
And the exotic meats, because it has its own set of animals there as well.
I mean, really, if we're thinking about The Rock's Instagram and anytime he posts pictures of his food, right? If The Rock was a chef, I'm going to assume that like 90% of the menu is going to be banana pancakes with granola and Terramana tequila.
And Wolverine is here for it.
It's all he makes. That's actually the gag, is that everybody wants him to make all these things with these exotic foods, but he's like so health conscious and he's locked on cheat day, so it's just repeat banana pancakes,
right?
And then everybody's just getting hammered on tequila.
That's the way it goes. And then constantly in the background, Michelangelo is constantly trying to switch everything into a pizza, but he keeps getting caught and The Rock won't let him do it.
Pizza pancakes. He's like throwing cheese and pepperoni on the pancake.
Exactly. Boom. There it is. I think I would watch that cooking show. I think it would be quite entertaining, the dynamic of the five various cooks. And obviously The Rock is the lead there. He's in the middle. But you've got Raphael with his size on over here. And Donatello is measuring ingredients using some sort of mechanical device. Leonardo's in the back with his knives just...
So you're thinking more so like Rock owns a restaurant, he's the executive chef, and the turtles are the kitchen crew?
That's how I envision it on this, like, because it's a show.
Yeah.
And so they're like they have personalities, you know their names naturally, but in essence, they're like the sous chef.
That would be super funny. Instead of Terramana, he can make Krakoamana tequila.
There you go. Or it's like Iron Chef style, where somebody has to come in and challenge.
Ooh,
and
you've got beat Bobby Rock. Flay. Yeah.
Yeah. Beat Dwayne Johnson and the Turtles.
And if you do somehow manage to outcook him, he just like rock bottoms you into a deep fryer. Just
right.
Ends yeah. It, goes full heel.
Sends you to the center of Krakoa, right? Where Sabretooth is. Yeah, just boom to the depth of like nothingness that is the center of Krakoa right now.
Chef's justice.
Nice. I like it. And then I go, what would the show be called?
That is a good question.
Because you kind of want to find something that is very Dwayne Johnson.
Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Oh, it's right there. It's just right there. It's right there in front of you. And I was trying to find some way to work in the turtles. Nope. It's right there. Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
Shame on me for that not coming to mind immediately. Like, that pause was authentic. I'm just going to say that out there. Like,
yeah.
But I think that would have to be what it is, right? I mean, he's already established his future cooking show game. Like, it's ready to go.
Odds are the real Rock in real life has already filmed a pilot.
Right? Yeah. It's 2023.
Yeah. When he launches his presidency candidate, you know, when his candidacy for president, he's also going to launch his cooking show.
Everybody loves The Rock. All right. Well, we're going to keep it going here. Let's see what we've got. So we're going back. We've had a big theme here on a lot of video game characters. But this is actually one of our first female characters that we've talked about here. So we've got the hero Aloy from Horizon Forbidden West that's coming up, Horizon Zero Dawn from a couple of years ago, with, you know, her Hawkeye type style. She's got the bow, she's got the trap, she's got the smarts. She is going to go over to Metropolis. So now we've got a little bit of like a jungle to jungle thing. We've got like Mimi Siku coming out of the jungle into the big city.
Okay.
To save the future. So Aloy in Metropolis to save the future. Oh, and another evil version of Captain America.
Oh my. Captain America just can't keep himself on track these days. And he's crossed over into the DC universe as he's in Metropolis now.
Yeah, yeah.
Very surprising. So we'll call it President Captain America. In this evil version of Metropolis, very similar to when Superman became president, just wasn't evil there. But I like the idea of Aloy going to the future. I like this. It's very fitting for her.
Yeah, with all the tech aspects, some, you know, dystopian future stuff that goes on in those games with the machines and everything like that. You know, how far into the future are we going to go here?
Oh, it's got to be, what, 2099?
2099, okay.
Let's keep it on par with Marvel-type stuff and say 2099.
All right, so I'm thinking, like, you've got kind of like a cyborg evil Captain America then.
I can dig it. I can dig
you
it.
You know, he's got some technological advances. Metropolis is thriving. And Aloy has to come. So you are definitely a captain aficionado. You've played a lot of the Horizon games. So, you know, where do you see this one going? If we just look at it from the standpoint of, you know, in order to save the future, Aloy has to take down and defeat Captain America. How do you think that fight goes?
Ooh. Well, I think Cap here, Cyborg Cap, would have the advantage in the concrete jungle that is Metropolis.
For sure.
He's going to be a little more used to that environment, especially for living for 1,000+ years and being all cyborged out right now. The technological advances are all there, but Aloy has the range, and she's got a lot of little trick arrows and trick weaponry. So I think that definitely gives some sort of head-to-head battle if she can keep him at a distance, and especially use some of those arrows that maybe like knock off chunks of metal.
Right, yep.
You know,
some of the trick arrows.
I can't think of what they're called off the top of my head, but they're definitely the purple ones that send out the sonic wave. And so when you need to like take off a chunk of metal from a dinosaur, she'd use like one of those and maybe take off like a chunk of Cyborg Captain America's armor in some fashion. But I think maybe this is a lost cause. This is an apocalyptic future that can't be saved.
I think it would be an uphill battle, you know, if we're going full evil, like Hydra Captain America, cyborg integrations, we're in the future. You got to assume the Metropolis is probably some sort of like a nanny state. There's just cameras everywhere, you know, tech everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So he's going to be able to tap into that, I would assume, given how we've set this up. And so I think maybe the challenge that Aloy would have is that even though she might be able to get a few shots on him, either like a surprise attack or something, she's really going to struggle to use one of her other skill sets, which is stealth, because he's going to have eyes everywhere. You know, she's going to have to go maybe underground or just something along those lines where she can escape his view. But in a one-on-one, if they get in close, I think Cyborg Captain would probably take it.
It's true. Very few people out there could take Captain one-on-one.
Well, that's true. He's a top-tier, you know, fighter, regardless of what side he's on.
Very true, very true. But I like the idea of this, like, brother-eye police state in Metropolis. You know, think of Injustice and what that looked like. But instead of an evil Superman, you insert that Cyborg Cap. And it could get pretty unique. Pretty unique. She wouldn't go down easily. It would definitely be a fight. She would orient herself, find ways to stealth the best she could. But I do think at the end of the day, that final boss battle, it would be very, very difficult because he's going to have other people around him.
That's true.
And she might not have the support system that she may have that she has in the games. She's going to be on her own.
That is true. I think that as long as she's got arrows, she stands a chance. But if she were to run out of arrows, like if the fight went that long, then it's going to be over. Because her hand-to-hand skills, not really her strong suit. We know that Captain definitely is a top-tier hand-to-hand fighter. And he got, you know, of course he's got some range with his shield as well. But I'm thinking that it's a drawn-out fight. Aloy definitely holds her own, but ultimately she reaches for the quiver. There's nothing there, and Captain probably ends it.
Yep. I'd say the only time that she wins is if she can somehow set off an EMP.
There you go. Yeah, a quick surprise of some sort. Yeah, that could end it. That could end it.
And then basically this futuristic Metropolis just becomes what she's used to.
Yeah, okay. I like that, though. Okay, yeah, that would be a good second form. Like, if we had a take two, yeah, she gets some sort of EMP, puts it into the Dark Ages, and then takes him on.
Right.
I like that, yeah.
I can dig that. I can dig that. Well, let's spin the Wheel of Destiny one more time, and we're going to end up seeing, we have another female lead here in Princess Peach.
Oh.
She's headed to the Super Bowl to do laundry again, and Magneto is present. Ooh. Now, some questions pop up with this one being at the Super Bowl, and I'm going to go ahead and she's going to go to the Super Bowl. She's going to do laundry, all the teams, you know, that halftime laundry, boom, knock that out. Now let's get to the good stuff, and evil Magneto, a.k.a. you know, Jerry Jones.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Was he's totally like the evil owner.
Yeah, Magneto is basically, sorry to any Cowboys fans out there, but he's basically the big evil owner at the Super Bowl. You know, it's being housed in his hometown, his stadium, and Princess Peach is there to wreck his day and save all of the NFL.
Well, I don't know if I would say wreck the day. I'm thinking more along the lines because she's just so... She's so innocent, you know, she goes along. So, you know, she might just be there to work her 9-to-5, do her laundry at the middle of the halftime. But, you know, ultimately she uncovers some sort of cheating and, you know, deflated balls or whatever it might be, right? You know, all the stuff we've seen over the years. She uncovers a plot to throw the game, ruin the integrity of the NFL, you know, ruin everybody's experience around America, and it's all because of the evil Magneto owner.
Ooh, yep. And then she's got to take him down now. That is a tough matchup for Peach.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure how many mushrooms are going to help her in this situation against Magneto. However, I do have faith that maybe she'll charm him.
Yeah, I mean, the key would either be some sort of charm, even though he seems pretty, you know, non-susceptible to things like that. You know, you never see Magneto with a lot of love interest or anything along those lines. He's always sharp, right?
You know, he is always sharp.
He always is calculating. He knows what's going on. But, I mean, I think it also comes down, I mean, does Peach have that crown on her head? Because if that crown's on her head, man, she's going to be in for some bad news bears.
Well, I wasn't thinking about the crown. But more, and you would say it's going to be metal, so Magneto would sense it. But I think he wouldn't think twice about it. He'd be like, oh, it's such an ordinary thing. But the frying pan from Mario RPG on the Super Nintendo, that was a beast weapon. Maybe the strongest weapon in that game.
Yeah, for sure.
So if she could somehow just, just under the radar. Magneto, like I said, he's seen a million frying pans. He doesn't think twice. She gives him a good clock on the back of the head.
Ooh.
Helmet, no helmet. Magneto's going down.
She's thinking like straight cast iron frying pan.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. It is that straight, you know, Super Mario RPG, just flap, just critical hit right on the back of his dome.
Yeah, he might not have been paying attention. He might have had a couple scotches, you know. He's here celebrating. His team's in the Super Bowl. Looking for another ring, and yeah, his guard is down, you know, he's got the helmet down, his hair's down, and she just comes in and just,
just whack him. And I also like the idea of this montage of her, like, working her way through the hallways to get to the suite level where Magneto is, you know, because she's just a lowly, she's just there to do laundry, she's there to do her 9-to-5, and then she discovers this, and she's got to work her way up to the penthouse. And all of the mini bosses that she's going to have to fight, like you, obviously the entire Brotherhood of Mutants,
right.
She's going to have to take them all out. So, you know, Pyro hits her with the fire. She blocks it behind the frying pan and then comes out, throws her own mushroom at him. He gets knocked unconscious. Then she takes on Sabretooth and he's trying to claw at her and scratch, but he doesn't realize that the frying pan is actually made out of adamantium and can withhold his claws. She whacks him across the face. It's all chaos, man. It's all chaos.
Nobody takes her serious enough, so she gets the upper hand from that.
Yeah, the only person that maybe challenges her is Mystique.
Ooh.
Because Mystique will shapeshift into Mario, and maybe she thinks it's a friend. But she knows the scent of Mario's cologne, and that plumber smell that only Mario has from coming in and out of giant green tubes all the time.
Right, right.
And she knows that's not her Mario. Just whap. Gives her one good one for the money as well.
Nice try, Mystique. Nice try.
Not today.
Not today. Oh, man. I can't believe we just pretty much made it so that way Princess Peach takes down Magneto, no question, and the Brotherhood of Mutants.
Hey, don't mess with the frying pan, man. I'm telling you.
It's
I'm
true. You. Hey, she survived Bowser all these years. She's definitely able to hold her own.
Oh, yeah. Princess Peach has proven in multiple Mario games that she is a complete threat.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at you, Super Mario Brothers, too, where she'll just fly right over people, man. Princess Peach is the real deal Holyfield.
All right. Well, I think we've got time for just a couple of more here. So we are going to spin the wheels. see where we are traveling to next. Man, three straight strong female characters here. This is going to be an awesome one. We've got 11 from Stranger Things and all the powers that she has going to the moon.
To the moon, baby.
To the moon, like all of our crypto. To befriend...
Cameron Grimes? No.
Darth Vader.
Oh, to befriend?
Yes, yes. 11 has to go to the moon, not the Death Star. We're talking about the actual moon here.
The actual moon.
To become besties with Darth Vader himself.
Okay. So, and it should be our moon, not like Tatooine's.
Exactly, moons. Yes. Earth's moon.
I can dig this, especially because they're going to befriend. I think Darth Vader will instantly sense something in her and make her like his new Padawan.
100%. That's exactly where I'm thinking with this. He's going to see that she has got angst. She has got a lot of darkness in her, and she's got a lot of power.
Indeed.
We've seen this story before, and it is perfectly set up for these two characters.
Man, that and like, man, this the but I don't want to say buddy cop because it would not be a buddy cop at all, but just this villainous takeover of Darth Vader with evil 11. And you know, she's the question really becomes when she inevitably gets her lightsabers,
right? Yeah,
what is her style of lightsaber? Is it the one red, or is it like the Dooku kind of hooked handle? Is she doing double blades? Is she doing a Maul, you know, double-sided? Like, what is she doing here?
Yeah, that would be super interesting because she's such a force power driven character, essentially, you know, if we were to simplify it. I'm definitely thinking something yellow, at least, because it kind of goes in with like the Eggo waffles.
Okay.
You know, just to give a something from kind of her lore, I guess. But you know, I'm really I don't know exactly where I would see as far as style. I think maybe more of like a minimalistic, so maybe like two small lightsabers.
Okay.
Because she has such strong control of her force powers, right? Like,
yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a lightsaber. We all understand that. But for her as a character, I could see almost being, you know, as more of like the second option or that 1B to how she approaches things.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of Ahsoka in the Clone Wars show. She eventually gets a second lightsaber, and she has her main one, and then her secondary one is actually more of a dagger length. It's not a full lightsaber, so she's almost dual dagger lightsabers, and I'm going to give her one red, one yellow.
There you go.
Because I think that would look for a sweet when she crosses them. That would look really cool, and obviously she could do the whole 11 hand force bit.
Right, yep.
And the lightsabers just float right in front of her hand. She doesn't drop them or put them at her side. She does her force power while also having them float just in front of her hand so she can quickly grab it again.
That'd be sweet. And kind of taking it back to the beginning here, I'm envisioning how they would meet, right? I'm thinking Vader's on the moon. He's already doing something. Maybe he's got a team of Empire nitwits, you know, digging or looking for something, right? 11 shows up. Vader's immediately going to consider the threat, right? So maybe he turns around, gives her the force choke, but 11, instead of, you know, being worried, she looks back at him and she fucking force chokes him, you know, because she's just got such strong powers, and he's just like, okay, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I am your father now.
Yeah, now. And then she goes, Papa?
Papa. Papa Vader?
Yeah. Papa Vader? I'm thinking how she gets to the moon. Like, the Russians totally sent her there.
Yeah, you know, the Russians or Jeff Bezos, I don't know, you know?
Yeah. It's true. I was trying to keep it in the context of the Stranger Things universe, but I like that. Yep, yeah. Amazon sends her to the moon.
Right.
Let's make it happen. I like this. We see glimpses of 11 going dark throughout Stranger Things, but this idea of 11 and Vader teaming up is pretty sweet. And then go on the whole intergalactic scale, because she has seen some things in the Upside Down.
Right, right.
Especially with all the monsters that we've seen come out of there. So anything that she'll eventually see in galaxies far, far away will not frighten her.
Yeah, nothing's going to compare to the Demogorgon. I'm really getting some vibes. I'm thinking back now to the relationship between Vader and Starkiller in Force Unleashed.
Yeah.
And how they came to be. And Starkiller was young, just crazy powerful, and ultimately, you know, became a Padawan of Vader there for a little bit before kind of switching back, right? So, you know, maybe that would be how all of it would end, is Will and them come up, you know, they turn her back to the good side and then end Vader's reign. But I don't know. That's a fun one. That it really fits together a lot better than you would think, really, I think, at surface level.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree, especially when you start to think of the father-daughter dynamics that both of them have with their respective people in their universes. It does fit together really well.
Yeah.
All right. We think got time for one, two more here?
Yeah, let's do a last one here.
Last one here. Let's spin them up. Hopefully get some good stuff. We've got the Joker.
Ooh, as the hero?
Ooh, the Joker as the hero. And he is headed to Cybertron. The planet of the Transformers, to eliminate a threat to the multiverse.
Oh!
And that threat is Doctor Doom.
Oh, wow. Wow. What a perfect way to end this multiversal mashup. Jeez. I mean, just the idea of the Joker as a hero here is intriguing enough. Where do you think that lands? What does that look like?
Yeah, that is really, really wild. I mean, we've seen some alternate versions of the Joker throughout comic history. And if anybody's reading the most recent Batman White Knight story, it's actually a bit of that flip where Joker is the hero. But any number of Injustice universes, you could probably see the Joker being a good guy in some of them. But he's like that chaotic good. He's, you know, that's how I'm kind of envisioning it. He's still going to have all of the Joker tones and insanity, but he's going to be doing them for a positive reason.
So instead of just random acts of violence, he's just like all over the place, but he's doing random acts of kindness.
Yeah. Well, and then like, and some of it may be violence still, but it's all in the name of a good cause.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The more interesting thing I think here is Dr. Doom, who already can manipulate electricity and a lot of metal on Cybertron, a planet that is home to the Transformers,
yeah,
who are mostly, you know, a metal-ish material.
Oh, yeah. That is a perfect world for Dr. Doom. I'm envisioning, you know, instead of the different factions of the Transformers, you know, they're all, like, looking like Optimus Prime or whatever, but they're Doom bots. You know, they've all got, like, Doom's face on them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, the Autobot symbol is, like, is Doom's face. Yeah, oh, man. What kind of Transformer do you think he inevitably turns into?
Doom?
Yeah, Doom. Like, if Doom were a Transformer, because I think I'm going to say at this point, if he's living on Cybertron, he's taken it over to the point where he's the ruler. He's figured out a way to transform his own body into some sort of automobile, or like, you know, is he just like Megatron, like where he's just a big dude?
I would almost say he would end up being something like a Megatron. I mean, because Doom is so into himself, too, that I don't know if he would find any other object to be, you know, his equal or superior enough to have him change his form into something else, right? So, yeah, I'm thinking he just gets bigger. Maybe he's just got some sort of way to you know, bring in the other Autobots, the other robots on Cybertron into his being to just keep adding to him and just keep getting bigger and bigger and stronger and stronger. I mean, he's so smart, you know, he's always thinking like that.
I could see that. He's like a Megatron.
Yeah.
Not a Megatron. Yeah, like
Megazoid.
Yeah. He has a Megazoid. But then again, I think Optimus, all right, we're going to go to the Michael Bay universe here of Transformers. You know, Optimus kind of pieces all together.
Right.
The various parts. And I think it's in the second Transformers movie when he does that. Like, Doom could absolutely do that. Just kind of beef himself up. And then I feel like Doom Prime. I love it. I love that name. But I'm thinking of, like, where does Starscream fit into all of this? Because, you know, Starscream is kind of always on Megatron's shoulder.
Yeah.
He's also secretly always trying to take over.
Right, right.
I feel like Doom gets one whiff of that, and he's like, yeah, I'm just going to kill you.
Yeah, I think you'd almost have to, like, kind of recast anybody that's going to be involved, and so Starscream or somebody like that would end up being more of, like, a victorious character to Doom, like his right-hand man or right-hand woman, you know, leader of the armies, things like that. You know, Doom is about total subjugation, so he is not going to put up with any people getting out of line or any people, you know, thinking uniquely, you know, thinking for themselves. And maybe that's where the Joker is the perfect hero for this story, because if we've got Doom launching this huge attack on the entire multiverse, he's definitely capable of doing that. He's going to be calculated. The odds are going to be in his favor. But you've got chaotic Joker who you cannot truly plan for. Even Batman can't always plan for what the Joker does. And so that could be that perfect catalyst to actually let this happen.
Oh, yeah. The Joker breaks the equation.
Exactly. Yep.
Like 100%. Yeah. Very formulaic and planned to the T. And then you throw in somebody like the Joker who you literally don't know. Like, we know, obviously, as the hero, he's going to do things for good. But you don't know what that's going to be. Like, maybe he shoots himself in the foot. Maybe he blasts Starscream in the face. Maybe he takes a crowbar to somebody. You don't know. And I do like that idea of this really planned, methodical Doom trying to figure out a hero that just does things at random that make no sense.
Right. Yeah. That just maybe somehow add up to victory in the end. And the Joker has so much experience with Bruce Wayne and Batman. You know, Victor Von Doom, Dr. Doom are similar. They're not the same, but they are both highly intelligent, highly wealthy, very capable, you know, in fighting and gadgets and the whole nine yards. So Dr. Doom is also kind of a you know, the enemy I know kind of situation for a character like Joker.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's very much repeat it at all. But yeah, I think Joker is more familiar with a foe like Doom than Doom is with a foe like Joker.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because Joker would be totally different than like a Reed Richards or any of them that are your typical Dr. Doom, you know, adversaries. Who do you think wins this one?
So I think the Joker ends up winning this
one. You think
he
does it, you know?
I do, because I think of, you know, all the planning and procedure that Doom goes through, it ultimately comes down to like one little thing. Joker just finds himself at the core of this entire planet, and he jams a crowbar. right into some weird piece, and the whole planet just
powers down, yeah,
just
falls
powers
apart.
Down, and I don't know what transported Joker into this universe, but he instantly just, like, teleports himself out, and bye!
And Doom has no idea what happened. I could see that. I was kind of thinking along the lines, because what we see with Doom a lot is that Doom will have everything in control, even if he's got a big adversary coming at him. And a lot of times then Doom's own internal struggles will take over, and he will, you know, get in his own head, essentially, or he'll change his plan, and that will end up being what, like, Doom a lot of times will end up defeating himself,
right,
because of his own, like, hubris and just some of the stuff that goes into his psychological makeup. So I was almost thinking maybe, you know, the Joker almost doesn't give a shit. He's out just doing all these things. Doom perceives it as a threat, and then kind of it drives him nuts. Like, he can't figure out how to stop him. He can't figure out where he's going to go. And so ultimately, like, Doom shuts everything down, thinking he's got to, you know, save it that way. And it pretty much, like, kills the plan because the Joker drove him so mad.
He's so insane. I like that idea. I think the last piece to this story is, what is the Joker's attire? Because over the years, we've seen various looks on the Joker. You know, you've got the pinstripe suit. You've got the Hawaiian look, you know, with the camera, and he's on vacation. You've got the top hat. There's a few different Joker looks. There's the Heath Ledger version, of course, is a little more realistic. Like, what is his look for this one?
I would like, yeah, like one of the more formal Joker looks, whether it's like the purple tux or the, you know, red, the original, what is it, like Red Hood one, where he's in like the full black and white penguin suit kind of tux.
Oh, like the magician look?
Yeah, the magician look. I'm thinking something like that, but then, you know, mechanical, like robotic, like the Transformers style. So like when he enters this world, it kind of gives him those hard lines, kind of blocky looks, but he's still the Joker.
Yeah.
And then maybe what he actually can transform into is a crowbar.
Oh, okay, so we're giving the Joker transformation powers.
Why not?
In this universe.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah, yeah. He transforms into a crowbar. I feel like he's like, wah, 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 yeah, and then he just falls flat on the ground.
But then
like,
the crowbar falls on like the generator you were talking about earlier, and then he doesn't even move. It just hits it, you know.
Yeah, he just hits it. He just hits it. I do see this because you were talking about the Red Hood look. I do love this idea that when he goes up against Doom and Doom in his formal kind of like of it all, he gets that classic Joker quote of, he's like, I used to go by that number. When I did, it was more Mater D and less, you know, leather motorbike fetish.
Yeah.
And like some sort of thing, like there's some sort of back and forth on what Doom looks like. But I actually originally had thought I wanted him in that Hawaiian shirt and the sandals. But no, I like your version much better. I like your version much, much better. Well, we hope that you all enjoyed our mashed up story combos. And of course, we want to thank each and every listener, both those of you who have been with us since chapter one and those of you that maybe just started here at 50. As always, we'd love to hear from you about any future chapters and maybe even some of your own homebrewed stories.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this discussion, go ahead and smash the subscribe button so you never miss a chapter of Geek Ketchup, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to follow GK on social media. You can find links to all of our accounts on the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even links to our merch store and Patreon if you'd like to support the show. But as always, remember to stay saucy, you nerds.